just like that, your ears have been invaded. Welcome to yet another episode of Pitch Invasion, episode number 25. And once more, a lot to look back on, a lot to talk about. Some teams going from 4th to 5th to 6th all in one weekend. Others going back to 4th and pretty much where they belong, really. And others dropping down to 2nd once again. This and so much more to look forward to over the next couple of minutes on Pitch Invasion. We're going to start, well, I guess by introducing ourselves. Lwazi Sekubu is my name.
I'm Xola Makwaza, as always, coming in like Roy Keane against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup in 1999.
Wow.
You're going too far, my friend.
Please tell him.
Yeah, this is Emeka Nyadike, all the way from sunny Lagos.
Oh, are you in Lagos? Are you not in Uyo, aka the Bafana Bafana stomping ground?
No, slaughterhouse. I don't go to Bafana Bafana's.
Is there a statue of Percy Tau there already?
Nah, there should be one there. I was actually talking about him yesterday with some people and saying how him and Tokelo Ranti should get like stadiums or something named after them in Uyo.
Tokelo Ranti Stadium in Uyo. Oh, well, I'm glad we actually started with two sort of hitmen of South African football over the past couple of years, because we're going to talk first up about the, I guess you could call it the hit game or the big game or the derby game or derby of derbies as far as local football is concerned, local being South African, of course. It was yet again Kaizer Chiefs up against Orlando Pirates over the weekend, and another great social event for people to go to and sit in the VIP and take pictures. But on the pitch, Olan, what did you make of the 90 minutes?
Was a very good game, in fact. You know, I know the draw was not what everybody expected, but come on, it wasn't a nil-nil draw. In fact, we haven't had a goalless derby in, I think, the last 13 or so derbies. So, you know, can we get that off our backs, you know, for a while now? Like, can we get people back into the derby, finally, you know? You know what, the Chiefs actually surprised me. They actually turned up in this game. They took a lot of pressure from Pirates in the early stages. I thought Pirates should have at least taken the lead on two occasions. But Chiefs really surprised me. They actually, you know, went all out. It wasn't the apprehensive Chiefs of the last couple of derbies where, you know, they weren't so sure of themselves. And, man, you know, shout out to Bernard Parker as well. He really rolled back the year. I mean, Bernard Parker looked like a hungry young player. But, I mean, he was a veteran coming into this game and showed his experience. And I thought that his performance, I think, lifted Chiefs more than anything. And Akpeyi, the goalkeeper, actually put on some decent saves. He really didn't look out of place at all. You know, I'm not saying that he's going to, you know, replace Kune or anything, but he really, you know, put a claim to his name for, you know, maybe staying at Chiefs down the road.
Should Ernst Middeldorp look at that performance from Akpeyi and say, you know what, we're not in a position to be gambling, so Virgil Fries, you've had your chance. This man has come in, and based on that performance, because I mean, I'm thinking of Wayne Sandilands as well, who, based on his performance in the CAF Champions League, clean sheet, was given a start in the derby. Should Middeldorp be thinking maybe Akpeyi is the answer at the moment?
I think he should stick with him.
I must say that I was quite impressed with Akpeyi, because that was like some kind of baptism of fire to join Chief. The first game you play is in the derby. He didn't look like he was at all under any kind of pressure. He was very relaxed, and I must say that just watching the game from all the way here felt a bit different, because if I'm watching the game in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost like taken in by the emotion, but I was relaxed watching the game, and I must say that I thought Chiefs be happy with the result, because for once they were not overwrought by Orlando Pirates, and you know, on the contrary, I thought they put up a good show, and Akpeyi, you know, will bring a bit of joy to the Chiefs faithful, because you know, Vries hasn't done them too much.
Ooh, yeah, no, if you're a Chiefs fan, and the name Virgil Fries just like sends shivers down your spine, it really does. But I look at the Chiefs' performance, and I think to myself, since Middeldorp has taken over, at least in local football anyway, there's been a marked sort of improvement from, as far as the performance is concerned. I can't remember a game, a league or otherwise, where Chiefs haven't played well, despite the result. They've played really well under Middendorp. I guess the results, that consistency is still sort of missing.
I think with Middendorp, what he's done, he's actually put out the right team.
Mm.
You know, because Bernard Parker wasn't featuring much under the previous coach. Mm. And I think he's sort of put in the right team, you know, for a combination that works. Because for me, you know, Kaizer Chiefs traditionally, guys, are the team of flair. Mm. You know what I mean? When you think back of the, you know, the Thabang Lebisi Kaizer Chiefs, the Jabulani Kaizer Chiefs, this was a team that always played on flair, always used the 12th man, mm. you know, the fans, and always played entertaining, fast football. And I think Ernst Middendorp, having, you know, previously managed Chiefs some time ago, gets that.
Mm.
And I think what he's done with the team, he's sort of gone back to their roots, gone back to the DNA, bringing Bernard Parker in, utilizing Kamabiliat in an effective position, I think, which was out wide,
mm.
as opposed to behind the strikers. And I think it's paid off. And, you know, in the derby, you could see that he almost gave the message to the guys to say, look, guys, don't forget that the derby is about two Soweto Giants. You are a giant as well. So get out there and show these guys what you have. And Chiefs really gave it to Pirates. In fact, I think in the last few minutes of the first half, Chiefs could have easily scored two goals.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as a Chiefs fan, if you are a Chiefs fan, I think you should take positives from this performance to say, look, we drew against a team that is, you know, up there amongst the title contenders. And, you know, we still have a Nedbank Cup to play for. You know, there's still continental football to also play for. Why not take positives from this? And, you know, this could take you forward.
Imika, as far as Pirates is concerned, this draw, how much damage do you feel it does to their, you know, title credentials? And I mean, you look at Wits, who are beaten as well. So, you know, as far as they're concerned, they could look at it as a point gained. But do you think that I wouldn't say the wheels are coming off, but do you feel that maybe the percentages, as far as their title credentials are concerned, are dropping a bit?
I think there are still a lot of games to play, and with what we've seen with some of the top teams dropping points, what is important for Chiefs is to try and see how much they can you know, win a few more games to put them in good position. Psychologically, not losing to Pirates really will be a boost for them, and I think that you can't write off Chiefs too much. I took another look at the table again yesterday, and I'm thinking a few weeks back, Sundowns had so many games at hand. Now Sundowns have just two games, and it doesn't look like they've caught up with Bidvest, which means that, you know, potentially if Chiefs and maybe even Cape Town City win a few games, they can make the title challenge something like a five team battle.
Yeah. I mean, you speak about Sundowns. Yeah. They're what, only 3 points behind Wits with those games in hand. So, I mean, if you look at that equation, it's pretty much, you know, and I've seen a lot of response on Twitter about that it seems very much as if this season is playing into the hands of Sundowns based on just where we are at this moment.
Well, I mean, they've got two games, and in the past, you will look at it and say, okay, two games is like, if they get 6 points. But you and I know that Sundowns sometimes also implode. And, you know, until they win those games, I'm not going to give them that benefit. I think that we just need to look at, they have
it's
they must
three
win
games,
those games.
In fact,
they have to win.
They have.
Is it three?
Yeah, it's three.
Okay, yeah, three. So they have to win those games because game in hand is not
9 points guaranteed.
Yeah. Points. You have to win them.
Mm.
It's not guaranteed because if you play three draws, then you're back to where you are. So you've got to win them.
And I mean, the other issue with those games in hand, you know, they're not going to be scheduled to your liking. They'll be thrown midweek somewhere where you probably had a tough game over the weekend.
Exactly, and then they'll play it where you have games over the weekend. You have also continental distractions. So
just like what happened when
I like to be in the position where Man City is, where they've won their the extra game that they played, and it's up to the other team to try and win their game. So Bidvest are sitting on top
Manchester City have beaten Chelsea.
Not mentioning Liverpool.
No, but here's my point.
You can raise your drinks now. Liverpool here's my point. Somehow
City's victory was so bad, it was so hurtful on Liverpool fans that Emeka has decided to call City by name and Liverpool by other team. I'm just like, I never thought I would see that. He can't even mention his team's name. Wow.
Well, I don't want to jinx them.
Okay.
So we'll just wait until 2024.
I'm trying to think in the South African situation, who is Manchester City and who is Liverpool at this stage? I guess Vids would be Manchester City.
I think Sundowns are City. Sundowns are definitely City with the way they spent.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Oh goodness. Well, the one really good thing I also took out of the weekend's Absa Premiership action was seeing George Luisi back on the pitch again. That was really good to see for SuperSport United. But what was even better was the winning goal.
Yeah, he looked in sharp. He looked in shape. He's hungry. Mm. Like, clearly, he's hungry. He hasn't played in some time. He's got a point to prove. And remember, he's a national team player. So yeah, for him, there are incentives as well to keep playing well because he wants to get into that national frame.
Mm.
And maybe he's possibly seen that, look, I've been at Chiefs, I've been at Sundowns. You know, who knows? Maybe he's also thinking, you know, maybe there's some offers overseas I might explore. Because I remember there were talks some years ago of him being linked with some clubs overseas. Yeah. I don't know why that fizzled out. So he's probably had a look at his career and thought to himself, look, I've got nothing left to prove in South African football. I've been at the top team, so maybe, you know, I should use, you know, these games that I have at SuperSport that I'm getting to launch myself overseas.
Mm, yeah. Well, and that goal.
But I mean, I said the same thing last week when we talked about him, and I said, you know, SuperSport is a big team, and if he has a good show in there, chances are that he might just give his career necessary kind of push. So we'll give him the incentive to probably have a go over the next couple of months till May and put himself back in the frame for Bafana.
And speaking of Bafana, that big date is still coming, and it's coming like a freight train.
It's coming actually.
22 March is right around the corner.
We were saying, Kev, please bring this date closer.
We're like, 4 months, what?
Yeah.
And now it's only about a month away, and we'll see if Bafana do have what it takes to go through to the Africa Cup of Nations. And before we move to European football, let's quickly give a shout out to the four teams that have qualified for the semi-finals, and of course, the FIFA Under 20 World Cup at AFCON Under 20. So Nigeria, the 7-time champions. Emeka, I'm sure you're very happy with that. There's also who else is through? Senegal.
I'm happy they qualified, Senegal. but they didn't play well.
Yeah. There's also Senegal.
Yeah,
for a lot of people are the favorites.
Senegal, yes.
Senegal are playing really well. South Africa and Mali.
Mali.
Yeah. So all those four teams are through to the FIFA Under 20 World Cup, and I'm sure for Nigerian fans, are really happy to be back there again. For South Africa, a second time qualifying in a row. So a lot of good things happening as far as South African football. And you look at the way that the under-17s, the women under-17s qualified for the World Cup. Banyana also qualified for the World Cup. So
what is wrong, Bafana?
I didn't want to go there. I did not want to go that direction.
Hey,
Bakola has taken it there. We don't know. We will see come March what is wrong with
gracious. Can I tell you something? Maybe they need to disguise the team, get those 17-year-olds, get those 20-year-olds, let them play,
and
okay,
yeah,
and let Desiree Ellis be the coach, and maybe, and let Temi Khatlana do the coaching during the session in terms of finishing, and who knows, maybe Bafana can get back into the World Cup frame.
Ooh, no, we need to get back into the AFCON frame first up, isn't it? And speaking of Africa, we have at this stage, and I think he's still here, a legend by all accounts of African football in South Africa. That is Samuel Eto'o. I mean, he regularly does make visits to South Africa, but this time there was a very nice picture shared on social media during the rounds of him and with a couple of local players, and one can only imagine, Ola, that he was, you know, parting, giving and sharing some wisdom as far as what to do when you come face to face with the goalkeeper and that big that big frame, that furniture called the poles.
You guys need to hire someone there too. When his career is over, you need to hire him to go around all the clubs and show them why they have those goalposts in football.
They're not just there to just furnish the stadium. You know, there's a reason.
I've got an interesting thing about the Samuel Eto'o one, right? And it might sound a bit controversial. Okay. I found it a bit weird, to be honest to you, because I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's just do a recap now, right? Jerry's Kosan is still alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sean Bartlett is here. He's living and breathing. Benny McCarthy is living and breathing. Joe Mosona is living and breathing. Okay. So what exactly is Samuel Eto'o going to show these guys when we have four prolific goal scorers in the country that are known for banging in goals?
Mm.
How can Samuel Eto'o get this gig when Jerry's Kosana cannot get that gig? Why would
I just don't understand. I respect
Samuel Eto'o, right? One of my favorite players of all time. But the point is that, you know, why can we not make legends of our own players? These kids obviously will know Samuel Eto'o from Google, YouTube, the Barcelona days and whatnot. Mm. But some of these kids have no idea who Jerry's Kosana is. They have no idea this guy going all the way to ASEC and scoring that only goal and coming back with the CAF Champions League trophy. That is a magnificent story. That is, you know, a story for the ages in local football. How can that guy not be, you know, asking? That guy should be a striker whisperer. Do you know what I mean? Just, you know, use him, you know, in all these junior clubs, use him in professional teams, use him in a national setup. So I'm not so like wooed by the fact that Samuel Eto'o came to part his knowledge, because I think we have guys here that we are not utilizing that have just as much knowledge. And on top of that, local guys that know how to play in local conditions, that know the PSL. So, you know, when you get Samuel Eto'o, I'm not quite sure why you would get him when you overlook the others. I'm not saying don't get him, but don't get him when the other guys haven't tapped into.
Emeka, you are disagreeing?
I'm saying that, you know, I don't know why Eto'o is around this time around, but I know that last year he was there with Castle for the five-a-side activation. If he's here for that purpose, then it's a brand thing, and the brand is trying to reach a lot more bigger demographic in Africa.
Mm.
You know, Jerry Kosana is involved with some other campaign, and then you've got Lucas and everybody else getting involved in the campaign. So with brands, you know, I can excuse them, but to what you say, I totally agree that we need to utilize Jerry Kosana, Sean Bartlett, and everyone for that purpose from a coaching strategy point of view. But from point of view of brand, the brands usually do their homework around
who has a huge
social media followership as well. Don't forget.
Okay, well, I mean, look, either way, I think whoever it is that we get to try and help us out, and so that we don't settle for our top goal scorer currently sitting on 8 goals for the season, you know, we need to move on from that. That can't be the standard.
Paul Pogba would be the top goal scorer.
Yeah, exactly. That can't be the standard, and it's been the standard for way too many years.
Sergio Ramos would have had the golden boot like 3 times in 5 years. Yeah.
As a defender.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion Podcast, the podcast for football travelists.
Well, golden boot in mind, there is one man who certainly found his scoring boots, and that is Kun Aguero. And all I was saying earlier, Emeka, that he's helped his fantasy team so much over the past couple
of
years.
He has revived my fantasy team. I was in a hearse, the Undertaker was there, and, you know, they were saying prayers, they were really shoveling the sand, and then Sergio Aguero just took my team straight out of the grave. I'm telling you now, with the performances.
But I mean, what a performance again! And you know, it's scary
that he's hitting that reach vein. And I look at Gabriel Jesus, and I'm wondering, like, you know, dude, are you ever gonna get play for this team? This man is scoring like this.
No, you're not. And it just goes to show that
he's just phenomenal. Right?
He's you know, and I think Pep perhaps, you know, has had to learn a very difficult lesson in that he tried to I don't know if ruffle maybe Aguero's feathers by benching him the whole time and starting Gabriel Jesus.
They had that period.
You know, there was that period where Kun Aguero wasn't a regular starter, and look at him now, and he's certainly leading this fight back that Manchester City are on. And unfortunately for you, Emeka, he's fighting back, or they're fighting back against your team.
No, I'm not worried at all. I think that
okay, say it. Say your team. Say your team's name. What's your team's name? Say your team's name, please.
Liverpool. We are Liverpool. We'll be fine. We'll be fine, don't worry.
Okay, but do you think that, the magnitude of the win and the opponents they're playing against, what do you think, if you were Jurgen Klopp right now, what would you, if you're looking at that situation, what would you be thinking?
I think that what Klopp did last week is what he should have done maybe a few months ago. You know, Liverpool changed their high pressing game, and they brought it back against Bournemouth in this last game. If they had done that against Leicester and West Ham, they definitely would have gotten something out of it. Just looking at the stats, you find Mo Salah playing from the right in this last game had twice the amount of contact with the ball as he did in and probably should have gotten maybe like a hat trick in that game. So Klopp needs to get back to what made Liverpool fire all the way to the cup final last year and bring them back to them, and hopefully we've seen a bit of Naby Keita now, what he can do in this game. Naby Keita, I looked at that video again. His pass took out six players.
Oh, come on, guys. Everyone does that pass.
You sound like those Arsenal fans who wait for that one pass for Mesut Ozil to advocate for him coming
back. Emeka, I trusted you. I thought you were better than that.
Well, I'm trying to give the man some credit. He's under fire the
I can see you digging deep to give. No, look, he did. He had a great game. He did have a good game. The one thing that I was really impressed with, and perhaps it speaks to what you've just said about Klopp going back to what has worked, is Firmino going through the middle and how really instrumental he was in a lot of the goals, and especially that Salah goal.
Firmino is a monster when he plays in that position. I mean, someone said to me like you know, he backheel. I said he didn't backheel. He rolled the ball.
Yeah, he did.
He rolled it into the part of the part. And you wonder, you know, how is he so aware that Salah will get into that position? It's mind-boggling.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to answer what you just said. Sorry to ruin your party. You know, I know I'm going to use a three-game period of Aguero's excellence.
Yeah.
Right? And it might sound crazy that I'm going to summarize where the title might go based on these three games of Sergio Aguero. But hear me out. Okay? Roberto Firmino's inefficiency up front is what could cost Liverpool the title, okay? Because for me, when I look at when I look at Manchester City, right? I'm looking at a team that obviously Sané can give you the goals and Sterling can give you the goals. De Bruyne can give you the goals and Gundogan can chip in and David Silva, you know, the midfield can give you the goals, right? And at the top of the lock. And you look at all the other teams that are struggling outside of that top two, right? You look at Chelsea. They didn't have a goal scorer for some time. You look at Man United. Lukaku was not firing. It seems like Rashford has hit rich vein of form. You look at Arsenal. They're in that mix because Aubameyang and Lacazette have been firing goals. So the point that I'm making is that the number nines, the strikers, are doing their jobs. They're banging in goals. I look at Liverpool and I think to myself, how much longer can they go in the Champions League, in the FA Cup, and in the Premier League when your number nine is not leading the line in terms of scoring? Tottenham Hotspur, without Harry Kane's goals, right? I know Son's chipping in, he's doing his job now that Kane is not there. But without Harry Kane's goals, Tottenham are nowhere near the top four. Mm. So I appreciate what Mo Salah is doing. It's historic, Mane is chipping in. But at some point, Firmino has to get himself in the double digits of the goal scorers as a number nine. Otherwise, I foresee Liverpool just, you know, not winning any trophy this season. And I think that's what also cost them in the Champions League, because they didn't have a goal scorer.
Firmino has got 9 goals. Mane has 12. And Salah has 17. And in fact, Salah has 20 goals already this season. He has 17 in the Premier League. So between the three of them, they've got 38 goals between the three of them. That's comparable with any other strike force.
I disagree, Amika. I disagree because, you know, Harry Kane, you can add a Harry Kane, but Sergio Aguero, you know, out of that 38, I think in the season, I think Sergio Aguero's on like 16 or 17 or something like that. Right.
In the league.
But Mo Salah has been playing as number 9 for most of the season.
I'm talking about the guys that lead the line.
Salah
doesn't lead the line. No. He's been put in there on a couple of games.
This season, this season, for the most part, Salah has been playing number 9.
And Firmino is. So the responsibility in terms of the goals, right? I think Mo Salah's goals are a luxury for Liverpool. You cannot tell me that Liverpool signed Mo Salah knowing that, or with the expectation that they're going to get 20 goals. That would be ludicrous to me.
Who cares? Right? We do have one guy amongst our front three who has 20 goals.
To score goals, and he's not scoring goals. And that is why I think Liverpool could end up not winning
if only this was like actually Arsenal and Liverpool on the pitch, like running at each other and just like destroying each other. And as United, we're just like, okay, thank you for coming in, and we'll just go above all you guys. But you know what? Look, Liverpool, they are very much in the hunt. They're very much in the running. And I think it's been important that Klopp or somebody within the club reminds them that nothing is done yet, because there was a period of panic, probably based on the media at Liverpool, and hopefully this win will sort of get them back, you know, somewhere near just that belief that they can actually do it. Because look, they're only behind by goal difference, and they've got a game in hand. But now a team that is, Amika, we are done with Liverpool.
Can we move on to the next topic? Thank you.
I was going to touch on Chelsea Football Club and what is blatantly going wrong at that football club. Some say it's the stubborn nature of Sarri. Some say it's just the lack of quality around Eden Hazard. Imika, where would you start? What is the issue at Chelsea Football Club?
It's Sarri. Everything starts and ends with Sarri. Sarri wants to have his way. He brings in Jorginho, and it's not working. He takes Mr. Kante, who has been responsible for keeping Chelsea tidy defensively, and he pushes him into an attacking role. It's not working. Move Jorginho, brings him there to provide cover for the defense, and he doesn't do that. Because if Jorginho doesn't have to do as much defending as he has to do, then he probably will be able to deliver a lot more of his quarterbacking.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Sarri is stubborn. The more he smokes, the more he's able to get to stick to his guns.
That's discrimination against smokers.
It's rather unfortunate because it looks like Hazard will be on his way out of Chelsea if they continue like this, because something also very funny is that, you know, this game they lost 6-0. The previous game they won 5-0. The game before that they lost 4-0.
Yeah.
4-0. Then the other one they won 3-0. Then they lost 2-0. And someone was asking me who they're playing next week. Maybe they're going to either win 7-0 or whatever.
There's definitely a 7-0 coming. But a lot of sort of Chelsea fans that I know were talking about, in fact, and they made a very good point of how going into the game, Chelsea, who had been beaten 4-0 by Bournemouth, were never going to be a match for Manchester City, and it went to show, Ola.
No, you know what? I was disappointed with Chelsea because, first of all, can I just say something? Where are all these Arsenal haters? You know, because if this was Arsenal, if this was Arsenal, we would not hear the end of it, right? We would not, if Arsenal had lost 6-0 to Man City.
Yes,
please tell
him. Don't bring Arsenal into it.
But hey, right? But hey, I'm just saying. I will say something. I want to expand on Chelsea a bit further here, because I said this to a few guys that I'm in a football group with. And I said, in fact, I want to go back to something I said at the start of the season. And we discussed about Sarri coming into the league. And I raised a few points. And one of those points were the outlook of Chelsea as a whole going forward. And I said, you know, if Chelsea do not make the Champions League this season, and if they lose Eden Hazard, and the issue that I brought up is, what does Roman Abramovich do going forward? Because remember now, he's had political issues, you know, with the Russia, UK, you know, his visa, you know, there was stalling tactics, I think, from the UK authorities because he's Russian, he hasn't had his residence and so forth. And now he has to deal with, you know, his biggest star. Well, Courtois left. Now Hazard is going to leave at the end of the season. And Chelsea are looking like they might not have a trophy and fall out of the top four this season. So you then ask yourself, what does Roman Abramovich do going forward? Is this venture still worthy enough for him to invest in? Is he going to throw in another 200 million when he's losing some 100 million by not getting into the Champions League? Obviously, sponsors demand you getting into the Champions League. I know he's going to get Hazard money, but that must be invested back into the club because of financial fair play and so forth. I then worry for Chelsea as a club, because I think Roman Abramovich in the next 5 years or so is going to look at this venture, this ball, this toy of Chelsea that it is for him, and say, is this toy worth enough for me? Like, you know, it's almost going to feel like a child that's growing up and overgrowing a toy. Mm-hmm. And think, you know what, I've enjoyed this toy, now I'm moving on. And I fear that Chelsea in the next 3 to 5 years will be sold, because I just cannot see Chelsea being interesting enough for Roman Abramovich to stay at Chelsea. Because the other thing is that you hardly see him at Chelsea games anymore, right? He was always there with his, you know, lopsy-daisy clap, cheering them on in his suite, and you don't see that anymore. He used to come to the change room and give the guys high fives and promise them free vodka when they're big games. Doesn't do that anymore. Doesn't come to the training grounds anymore. So you then ask yourself, in the next 3 to 5 years, will Roman Abramovich still have the appetite to splash out the cash and invest in Chelsea? And I don't think so. I think this season is going to be the beginning of the end for Chelsea's so-called reign, because it's been a good reign. It's been a good 15-year reign that they've had. And I think Roman Abramovich, also added with the political situations with the Russia and the UK scenario now, I think he'll be forced to sell and Chelsea will be in limbo.
Well, I mean, you know what, if Chelsea...
I don't think so.
Okay, go on.
No, I don't think he will sell. I think that, you know, he just needs to get his act together in terms of the people who are running the club, because they haven't made some good decisions. Chelsea has a good group of players that they have, you know, out on loan, and they need to try and change their strategy and offer some of them the opportunity, because this idea of always trying to go and buy some players.
But
if you look at some of the young players, Odoi was almost going to buy, and it's
Odoi's not Hazard. I mean, they can keep Odoi, but the guy's what, 17? He's not a sure, you know, bet that he's going to come on. The other thing that Chelsea have,
Sancho went to Borussia Dortmund, and he's breaking records there.
The other issue,
Chelsea has a lot of talented young players. Kevin De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah. Even Tammy Abrahams, all of those young players. No, not Denver. Denver Bali when he was a bit older. I'm talking about real
young talent, right?
That they had.
Do you remember Demba's goal though?
I remember two of them. One for West Ham, one for Chelsea.
Amika, sorry to interrupt you. You know what the other issue that Chelsea have, right? Is you look at the age of that squad, right? Fabregas is gone now. Okay. Hazard is 28. He's going to move on. David Luiz is 30 or 29, somewhere there. Pedro's not young. I don't know if they're going to keep Higuain, but he's not young. And I think the average age of that squad is like 28 or something like that. It's not a young squad.
That's what I'm saying.
They're just going to bring in these teenagers to turn things around who have no Premier League experience or big time experience, it's a massive gamble. And I think, you know, my worry, you know, with Chelsea is that I don't think they have a philosophy, you know, that they can rely on. It's not like a Man United where, you know, Solskjaer came back and just installed Fergie's philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's not like Barcelona where you can go back to tiki-taka. They've got no philosophy. So even if these young players come back, they've learned different styles from Belgium to the Netherlands to Italy to Germany to France. So it's not like they're coming back and they'll be integrated into a philosophy. So it's not as easy as just, okay, all these young players that we have, bring them in. And they'll fit into our system because they don't have a system.
What I was going to ask you, Unika, is Chelsea, you know, have they been that side, this modern day Chelsea that we know, have they been the team that says we're going to develop players and get them through? Or is this Chelsea that again, has the money to go in and splash? Because for them to rebuild, it's never been in their blood to say we are going to go with this squad. It was only maybe under Mourinho the first time where he identified players, he brought them in, and for a couple of years he kept them and they won things. You know, since then, there's been a different coach every season.
From Man City has splashed money, but they bought young players. Mm-hmm. All of those players are young players. Sterling is young. A lot of them are young players. And if you look at Raheem Sterling, you probably might think, okay, no, he's English, he's probably not whatever, but I think he's a much better player. He's like almost, if he can just perfect his goal scoring, I think he will be amongst the top players in the world, because his performance week in, week out has been really, really amazing. I used to detest him because of how he left Liverpool, but I have to say that I admire the way he's playing right now. Uh-huh. And that's something that Chelsea needs to look at in terms of their investment. They need to. Michael Menalo, when he was sporting director, got them quite a lot.
Big loss. I think that's been Chelsea's biggest loss. That.
Which one?
Marcelo Milano. He was the sporting director. He was the guy that literally identified and brought in the players.
All of them. Kevin De Bruyne, he got all of them in.
Yeah, that was Chelsea's biggest.
Lukaku, he got all of them in.
Mm. Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think, again, for me, if Chelsea don't make top four this season, then it's the whole thing of them being sold will become even more of a reality, because, you know what, if they don't make Champions League this season, they lose Eden Hazard at the end of the season. They will need to replace him. They will struggle because aren't many players that are like Hazard. Sarri's going to go, which means they'll be playing Europa League football next season. Plus, they'll have Pulisic, who's, I guess, the replacement for Hazard at the moment, who still needs to come in and get used to the culture and get used to the football. It's just, it won't spell, you know, and the old players that they do have. It doesn't suggest that a lot of good will still be coming from Chelsea come next season. Obviously, we could be wrong, but they need to get their house in order, and they've struggled to do that ever since their unbeaten run came to an end. Ever since Sarri ball became what it is now, they just do not look like a team that is interested, in fact, in finishing top four. Maybe it goes back to their mentality that Sarri did speak about. But to answer the question that you guys asked earlier, who they are playing next. They've got Malmo in the Europa League. So it could be every chance of getting that seven. Yeah, we could very well
score that seven.
speaking of European football, it's the Champions League is back this week. And if you are a United fan, and I keep saying if you're a United fan as if I'm not, We've got PSG, which, you know, a difficult task, as difficult as it probably might get.
You know what? Half the team is injured, man. If you're a Man United fan, you're licking your lips.
I mean, you know what? Yes, if with a PSG without Neymar and Cavani is not
I think Di Maria and Verratti are also doubts, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, if Di Maria and Verratti are doubts.
Yeah, they've got about five players out.
Yeah, that's hey, look, I don't think as a United fan I can complain about that. So, I mean, PSG can still hurt United even with those five players out. But
I think the result of the first leg will determine the tie. Yeah. And you know, knowing that who they've got as coach for PSG, I think he's going to go there with a plan.
Mm.
And it's going to be an interesting game because United are on form.
Mm. As a PSG coach, though, what other plan do you have other than attack?
You see,
because they don't have
the problem is with PSG right now. Talk about a game. You know, PSG have been in the Champions League frame now for some time in terms of contenders, right? But they've always run into a Goliath. They've either run into the eventual winners or the losers or perennial contenders. Man United haven't been perennial contenders for a while now, but they're still Man United. But they have run into Man United at the wrong time.
Mm.
And PSG right now are playing the Champions League where everything matters more than it ever does. And you've got to feel sorry for Tuchel because there's talks about Neymar leaving, right? So he has to maximize everything he can to either keep Neymar. He's got Mbappe there. He's got all these players, and it seems like he's been given that task to say, okay, listen, we've cleared everything. We've given you the super team. We've brought in experience. Buffon is here. Dani Alves is here.
Mm.
You've got, you know, your Neymar, Cavani, Mbappe. Now, make it work. And he runs into a United side that's unbeaten in 12, and he's got five guys in the starting lineup that possibly, well, three are definitely not playing.
Mm.
The other two could not make it. Talk about a pressure game for Tuchel. So PSG will be in a lot of pressure coming into that game because there's a lot to play for them. And should they get out of, you know, the Champions League at this stage of the season, you then have to then ask questions, you know, will this module that they've been trying to build in terms of being this European giant, will it ever work? Because it doesn't get bigger than Neymar. It doesn't get bigger than Mbappe in terms of young players in the future. They've got a decent midfield. You know, they've got the Brazilian back, the two of Brazil's defenders, Marquinhos and Thiago Silva. So, what will the excuse be then? And, you know, I was talking about Chelsea having to dismantle in terms of, you know, if they don't get into the Champions League this season, what are PSG going to do?
I mean, that's a very good point because, as well, even Mbappe that you mentioned, he's, you know, forever linked with the move elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, no, the job is very difficult for two. On the other side of the coin, if he does get through this challenge, you know, it could set them up very well going forward because if they go through to the quarterfinals and they are match fit, they're squad fit, I mean, if as far as defenses are concerned in European football right now, there's no team that has a defense that can deal with PSG at their best.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, definitely. They have possibly the best attacking force in the league. Unfortunately, injuries have made them look a bit blunt. Mm. But so far, they're still managing to get the job done in France, and then hopefully we'll see.
Emeka, I want to ask you
how they cope with United.
Before we do close, I want to ask you this: going into the round of 16 and everything that has happened up until now, coming into this week in the Champions League, if we were to pick out a favorite or a team that is best placed to win the Champions League this season, what team would you? And I mean, look, even if it's Liverpool, it's fine. Get your blinkers
on.
But which team do you think is best placed to really have an assault at the Champions League and win it come May?
Liverpool.
Oh. No, okay. Remove the blinkers now. It's fine. Remove the blinkers.
I would say, look, Real Madrid don't write them off. They seem to wake up when they hear that anthem for the Champions League, and we've seen them, you know, a few weeks ago, looking at their fixtures, running into this Champions League week, we thought they've got Barcelona three times, they've got Atletico Madrid, they've got all of that, and they've started that run without defeat.
Yeah.
And he definitely will be looking like the perennial European champions that they are.
Okay.
Barcelona, on the other hand, somehow they probably are too good for their own good, because sometimes they can't, when they get into this Champions League semi-finals or quarter-finals, they now get into a place where they can't raise their game beyond that, because they blow everyone away and then they struggle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't want to write off is Real Madrid. I don't think Bayern will beat Liverpool.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. We'll see what happens with Tottenham, with Borussia Dortmund when they get up, because
but, I mean,
weekend, they,
whichever does happen between Spurs and Dortmund, neither of those two sides are going to feature in the semi-finals, surely.
No, they won't. I mean, I was quite disappointed with Dortmund in their game. They led off in 3-0 over the weekend and then drew 3-3.
Okay, so Emeka's going with Real Madrid. Hola.
Yeah, so Real Madrid.
Okay.
Hola. You know what? I must say, Juventus guys.
I don't think Madrid are going to win it.
Right.
I don't think Juventus are going to win it. But go on.
I tell you what, Juventus, although they got Atletico next, right, which is not going to be easy. But you know, I can't help think that when you have that defense, all you need is a goal scorer, and they have one. That's all they need. They need to win a game 1-0.
Yeah.
But you need a goal scorer, and they have that now. And you know, when I look at Cristiano Ronaldo's record in the Champions League, you know, something just, you know, he's almost like He-Man when he puts his sword in the air, and then all of a sudden all that electricity comes and he becomes He-Man, you know. And that's what Ronaldo becomes in the Champions League. And I think he'll be buoyed by the fact that he'll know that the guys are with him because they know why they brought him in.
Yeah.
And he will command that respect because they know that he's a, you know, a five-time winner. And they'll know that, listen, they're relying on him. So the guys at the back will give him blood and guts to stop those goals. And he knows that, listen, just give it to me up front. I'll do I'll finish the business. So I think Juventus, are really, really strong contenders coming to this this year's Champions League, because I mean, even in the finals that they lost, the one they lost to Barca and the one they lost to to Madrid, the only difference was they just didn't have a goal scorer.
Yeah.
The defense was not the issue, right? It was just a goal scorer. I mean, they lost to the brilliance of Suarez and Neymar, and then they lost to the brilliance of Ronaldo. But otherwise, it was the forwards that upended them. They now have one of those forwards, so I think Juventus really are going to make their mark this year.
Okay, so I think we'll remember this discussion come May, that one is going for Real Madrid, the other is going for Juventus. And unfortunately, I don't know, I don't see either of those two sides winning it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, just the way
where do you put United? You are a United fan.
Even if we do get past PSG, I don't think we have it in us to beat four or three big sides in a row to get to the final.
And City, like, I mean,
I think City,
City as
and that's,
like,
and that's my thing.
They don't have a strong squad.
And that's my thing. I think City, at their absolute best, have a very good chance of getting to the final.
But it's just not within their DNA. I mean, what game was it? I think it was against Lyon. And I know Lyon it was against Lyon. I know Lyon. Lyon are not PSG, but they're not Strasbourg either, right? So they're a competitive side. But Man City are the English champions, and the way Lyon just dealt with them as if like they were just another team really surprised me. So I just don't think they have it in their DNA as a club, the atmosphere also.
Yeah.
Because I remember something that Messi once said when they asked him about the Champions League some few years ago, and he just spoke about the DNA of the club in these competitions, how everybody just seems to know the importance. You don't have to ask someone to turn up. And you mentioned that I don't have to ask Iniesta to put in a performance. I don't have to ask Sergio Busquets. Yeah. They just know. And Manchester City, they don't have that. It's not in their DNA.
Iminka, what do you think about City's chances? 30 seconds. You've got 30 seconds to wrap it up.
I think that, you know, everyone expects, I think everyone expects City to mount the terrain this season. I don't think so. I think that somehow they're investing so much in the league as well, and somehow will get hit by some kind of burnout when they get into the Champions League in a situation. I don't think City will win this season.
Okay, all right. So there's Madrid, there's Juventus. It's a no for United. It's a no for City.
I think
big no for Liverpool.
After listening to Bola's analysis of Juventus, if they get past Atletico Madrid, they'll be dangerous.
Absolutely. Well, that is pretty much then everything that we were looking to cover. I can't think of anything that we have missed out as far as football around the globe is concerned.
Just something to report. We talked about Assisa Bashola moving to Barcelona. She made her debut last weekend. She comes on in the 62nd minute as a substitute and scores the next minute. Brilliant goal. I mean, that's great for African female football.
Absolutely. We are not surprised with that at all. We know the quality that she does have. But we also do know that Tembi Fatana has left her team.
Yes.
Yeah. She's, I think alongside, I can't remember the other lady's name as well. They've left their team over... in the States, she must just go and join Assisat in Barcelona, and they can be the
No, it'd be nice. The World Cup, she has a chance in the World Cup. She does well. She gets a good move.
That's a very good point as well, Iminka. Thank you so much for joining us, Iminka, from sunny Lagos, and hopefully we see
you soon
back in South Africa. We're enjoying some rather dingy weather at the moment, but it's okay. From myself, Lo Azizi Kubu.
I'm Kola Makwaza.
And Emeka, the next time we meet, we'll be having a holiday somewhere in Dubai or somewhere.
Okay, I'll take that. Goodbye.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username PitchInvader.